Hey, packaging peeps, it's Avelio Matos on Package Design Unboxed. So just a heads up, this episode is not G-rated. It is chock full of adult language. Consider this your warning. Today, we talk with my friend and designer, Kirk Bisola. He co-hosts the weekly Clubhouse meeting, Kirk and Kurtz, with Andy Kurtz. He also does Mondays with Marilyn, where he talks with his mom, Marilyn. I recommend you check both of those out. So Kirk and I had had a conversation before about the lack of Black designers, and I thought it might be a good idea to have that conversation on the podcast. I got to tell you, it's a super clunky conversation around a very sensitive topic, and I'm completely uncomfortable during the entire episode. We also get into Kirk's packaging design process. We talk about his clients and what he strives for with each project. And we get into just, you know, his sketching, the way that he promotes himself. We talk about some of his interviews that he's had before for job interviews. We get into a lot of details about him as a designer as well. So stick around, listen to the entire episode. There's a lot of information here. Normally I tell you what you're going to learn in each episode, but this episode is more about what I learned, including maybe that I'm not the right person to have this conversation on a podcast, but maybe that's the wrong way to think, right? Maybe we need to have more of these conversations that make us uncomfortable. How else are we going to get to know each other? So let's get to the show and let's get to know Kirk Bisola. Kirk Bisola, man. So I've known you through social for quite a bit. You know, quite a bit. It's like less than a year. Interacted with you on Clubhouse, watched some of your stuff, some of your stuff on YouTube, and you're a packaging designer, man. How are you doing? And you're like in the bat cave.
Yeah, I'm in the bat cave. First of all, hey, thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it, dude. People who are listening to this and aren't very familiar with Avelio's work, it's fucking badass. He even made a cool ass video of him walking through the desert and cutting up some paper to make a box. But nah, man, it's super exciting. We met through Adam. Adam introduced us, Adam Peak, and that's how we got together and got to know each other. Yeah. And currently I am in my workspace, the cave, and I love comics, and my favorite character is Batman. So, you know, it's like the Batman ring. Right. What? So it's just, yeah, it's my wedding ring. My wife said, I'll get you a ring. I'm like, no. And she showed me that. I was like, yes, I'll definitely buy that. So I'm here and this is where I work and just, it's just a mess. I mean, there's just shit everywhere between like my design work and, you know, I started my own clothing line and just samples everywhere. And it's just a mess in here. But yeah, enough about me.
So, all right. So you started a new clothing line. What's this clothing line? What are you doing?
Oh, it's called Bisola Brand, but it's VSLA, like V as in victory, S okay. As in Sam, L as in luxurious, and A as in apple, brand.com. And it's just my own site. I was thinking one day I want to have my own shit where I can just go on there and do whatever I want. I don't have any parameters. I even have a little thought spot on there that I call just, it's almost like a journal where I just write what's on my mind and I put it on there and put a date. I have two entries so far, but I realize that I'm so bogged down, or even as creatives are so bogged down by even constrictions that we're given, whether it be how to print something or the actual parameters that you're supposed to use in doing something. I was like, this is going to be a spot for me just to do whatever the fuck I want. And if people like it, great. If they don't, then that's great too. But I really wanted to make my own clothing. I've always wanted to for a long time. So I bit the bullet, bought some hoodies from a company, and also bought some t-shirts and all the chair, like, they're marked up, but I'm donating a percentage of the profits to a charity. And so I'm on behalf of the person who bought it, donating on their name. Like Corey has one, Adam has one. I sent donations on both their behalf. So Corey Connor from the Sustainable Podcast, shameless plug for him, and then Adam from the Packaging People. So yeah, good guys. And so I did it for everybody who buys.
That's awesome, man. And what is the charity?
It's called the Ella Baker Foundation. It's in Oakland, and basically they help with human rights and a lot of issues surrounding marginalized people.
Wow. That's awesome. And then, cool. And then, so you've got a clothing brand. That's not why we're talking.
Sorry.
No. You're a packaging designer. You're the creative director of Mind the Font. You know, you've got all your work on here. You've got all your packaging work on here. And one of the things you've got, as soon as you land on the page, you know, mindthefont.com is that you're a Black-owned full-service design agency.
Right.
And I talked to you about this before. It's like, you know, I want to ask you,
Mm-hmm.
What's the thought process in terms of labeling right off the bat that this is a Black owned full service design agency? But there's like an uncomfortable feeling when it's like, I'm not Black, I'm Colombian, I'm South American. I was smuggled into this country when I was like 6 months old.
Right.
But like even just having like a conversation on anything to do with race, there's always a level of discomfort.
Oh, always. Well, that stems, dude. I mean, all right, let's flash back 2 decades ago to when Kirk had no idea about graphic design, but Kirk, I'm speaking to myself in the third person, like Ricky Williams, Ricky Henderson from the A's. So I didn't know anything about graphic design. All I knew about was comics, which I told you about, and I loved drawing them and copying the lettering and thinking of different ways to handle things. And I didn't know there was a graphic design until I met my ex, whose father was the head of the creative services department at E&J Gallo Winery, the largest winery in the world. Them and Constellation are always fighting for it, but he was the head of the creative department there. So he oversaw all of the POS, all of the packaging, all of the go-to-market stuff, everything he oversaw, and I knew nothing about it. Well, my ex-wife was taking classes at San Jose State and I tagged along. I was like, what the fuck? I was a doctor, pre-med major, right? Everything for me was very objective, but design, there are rules, but it's super subjective. And there's super certain rules and parameters that you need to follow, but also are kind of flexible. And that's when I figured out, like, oh man, this is cool. And I was good at it. Like for some reason, I just stuck to it like a duck to water. I've always been a problem solving. And that's all graphic design is. It's problem solving. It's problem solving in a unique way that is succinct and reflective of what your client wants. So that's your job, is to make sure that your client gets exactly what they're asking for and what they're looking for, and you're solving for their problem. So flash forward, I'm in the design field and I never had my picture up because there aren't very many Black designers. There still aren't. I think there was a survey that was done by designcensus.org or designsurvey.org, and it was 3% of about 9,900 people were Black. That was it, 3% of those people in that small group. And so I realized, like, shit, you know, with everything that happened last year, it's like, why? I'm not hiding anymore, man. I'm gonna be who I am. This is who I am. My work's great. And I would straight up front tell you that this is a Black-owned agency.
Yeah.
And so when people see me, they're not taken aback by the fact I'm Black. That's happened several times in interviews because I didn't have a picture on my resume. I go on there and they're like, oh, hey, nice to meet you. Because Kirk Vaisola isn't a Black name, quote unquote. And so it kind of took people aback and had them go by surprise. So no, you know, you're Black. So I put that up front to show people that this is Black owned. It'd be great for you to support people who are BIPOC because we're not given the same opportunities. This isn't a fabrication. It's just true. And for people to see that, I want them to know that what they're getting, what they get, see is what they get. And I talk to people all the same way. I treat people the same way. And I'm fucking good at what I do. So just give me an opportunity and I can show you. So yeah, that's why it says Black owned. Long story longer.
No, absolutely. Right. And this is kind of, you know, we've had this conversation before, and you know, that's really what I want to kind of focus on here. I mean,
yeah.
your work's killer. I love like the stuff you've done for Raygun. In terms of like your work alone, I mean, it speaks for itself. That's her rad shirt. The stuff you've done for Organics, like you've worked with some amazing brands, you've done some amazing work. As a designer, you're fucking awesome.
Thank you.
When we first started talking earlier last year, and you mentioned that, I think I'd asked you like, you know, how come you're not posting more on social or more on LinkedIn? You're like, dude, I just put my picture up. You know, I haven't had a picture up before, you know, because there's like this stigma when, you know, people see a Black designer, right? You don't want to be prejudged on social. And at that point, you're like, no, forget it, dude. I'm just going to put this is who I am. I'm going to put myself out there. I had never even thought of that, saying that, like the fact that you put your picture up there was pretty eye-opening. And that's kind of where the conversation began. So,
right.
Before having your photo on LinkedIn, it just had like the standard, you know, little gray guy.
Well, no, dude, I put my brand there. So I have a KV logo. Mind the font. Yeah, or the mind the font. So I had the logo in there in place of my picture. And that was on there. That's been like my brand for the last long years. I mean, I hate to age myself, but it's been on there for over a decade. Like that KV has been like, well, that was my thing. And before that, I don't even know. Because you think about having an image or an image on social wasn't as prominent as it is today, because you would be still handing in paper resumes or emailing resumes, and there was never a picture associated with it. So, I mean, it sounds silly to not put your picture up because people want to identify you, but it automatically placed me in a category that wasn't fair to me to explain my skill set, like I was saying before, and that's why it wasn't on there. But now it's like, I don't care anymore. I'm at the point now where I'm at the, you know, fresh out of Fox. Like, I don't care anymore about what people think of me and how I look. And I'm going to be outspoken about things. I'm going to talk about rights. I'm going to say whatever I want to. But bottom line is, if you don't like me, fine. That's okay. I want to work with people I like, and I want to work with people who respect what I do and who I am. And that's why I'm so upfront about things from the get-go. Whenever I talk to people, this is how I fucking talk to everybody.
Yeah.
I do a Mondays with Marilyn. Marilyn's my mom. So we do it every Monday on Clubhouse, and I've been recording it, and I'm going to throw those up soon, but it's just conversations. And I talk to her the exact same way. And I give her shit and she gives me shit. And I try to make her laugh by saying things that are just, you know, incredibly off the wall and crass. And she usually does, because she knows that I'm a smart ass. Like, that's my thing. But the one thing I want to have a good time when I do my job, and I want to work with people who I like. And so those are two defining things. And I realized that part of that being myself and being who I like is just putting up a picture. It's so simple. It's so, like you were saying, like, it's not something you think about because we've had different experiences, but it's such a small thing. And it's so simple that people don't even really think about it. Like, it's like, oh, okay, I just put my picture up.
Right.
You know? And, but for me in the field I was in, it was, I always thought it was being frowned upon. Was I right in thinking that? I don't know. But that was just my experience with it. So that's why I just started putting the picture up. And that's why I started being a little more active on LinkedIn and things of that nature too.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's awesome to see everything that you're posting up there, man. But again, it's like, to think, you're right, just different experiences. For me, it's like, yeah, just throw my face up there. No question about it. And you know, to think that you've got to think twice, that somebody out there is thinking twice to show who they are, because they want to make sure that they don't want to not get an opportunity just because of a picture. I mean, it's just, you know, it's shit. It sucks. And that's not the way that things should be. So I love that you're like, I'm all out of fucks and I'm doing this. Cause I think, I don't know. I wish I had something like really deep, but I got nothing now. You know?
You don't have to have anything. You don't have to have anything. I never have anything deep, so don't worry about that.
But I do. But I do love. All right. So watching you and your mom talk about, like, you know, just have a conversation on your podcast, man. I laughed at so much. Like, you said something just off the wall. You can tell that you're trying to, like, tweak your mom, and your mom's like,
yeah,
your mom cracks up and she's like, I love Kurt. That's just him. He's a really good kid. Like,
right. We were talking about how people say that they normally aren't like that. You know what I mean? Like, someone, if someone says they normally aren't like that, that's just automatically a failing statement. Yeah. Like, oh, normally they're not like that. It's like bullshit. If they normally weren't like that, then they wouldn't be like that. I mean,
right.
And some, like, if it's one occasion, I can see someone having a bad day. But if it's several instances, then yeah, that's not right. But yeah, no, man.
So with your mom on your podcast, you kick off the podcast with, you have this smirk on your face, and you say, and your mom says something. She like introduces herself, and then you have this smirk on your face, and you're like, you're so well spoken, mom, and. Tell me about that, because that's a comment that
it's automatic assumption that Black people are stupid, or Black people don't speak with how should I put this, white people English. A dialect is established by a certain amount of people who use it and the means in which it's spoken in a certain community. So for instance, there's slang, but the slang is used by enough people to where it actually is a language. So if you hear someone speak and they use slang in certain parts or certain neighborhoods, like if it's Black, if it's Latino, if it's Asian, whatever the language is, it is technically a dialect. But when the overall grammar assumption that people have of you, when you're able to formulate proper sentences and be able to speak in a manner that is conducive to the commonly heard language that people read and write in this country, and then I used to seeing a person of my color speak that way or articulate myself that way, then the whole idea of any person of color is that they're well spoken, which is automatically racist. There's just no other way around it. Like you would never call anybody else outside of white well spoken. Or I'm sorry, outside of that. You wouldn't call anybody white well spoken, correct? So why would you use that anywhere else? And it's a derogatory term, but it's secretive derogatory. It's like saying thug, right? People say, oh, thugs for everybody, it's bullshit. Thug's just another name for it, the N-word, right? That's exactly what that means. So these people are thugs, like pull up your pants. It's just this means of giving backhanded compliments or straight up commands to people who you think that are inferior towards you. So a backhanded compliment would be, oh, you're so well spoken, or and there's all kinds of things. I can't think of stuff because it's myriad fucking examples. Yes. But like right now, it's just one of those things I just can't. So I said to her, like, as a means of messing around. My mom said too that she wanted to raise us like a liberal white woman would. Like, I want to teach you guys how to speak. I want you to teach you how to write. I want you to stand up for yourself, speak up for yourself, and not think that anybody out there is better than you, because there isn't anybody.
There's a piece in there that really stood out where she said, Black children are brought up having an inferiority complex, and that she really wanted to give you a superiority complex.
Superiority complex.
Right?
Yeah.
Can you tell me a little bit about that? And how are you,
mm-hmm.
like, this is super... I'm telling you, like, this is super uncomfortable to have this conversation.
Dude, it's a safe zone.
Yeah, like we said, it's like, we got to have these uncomfortable conversations.
Yeah.
And it's like, I think, what are the obstacles that somebody else might not see? Right.
Right. Like, yeah, that's a great question. And depending upon where you, like, okay, I was having this conversation with my mom. We never lived in a Black neighborhood. We just didn't. We had Black neighbors. A couple of them, we had Mexican neighbors, we had Southeast Asian neighbors and white neighbors, and we've grown up in this, like, basically an Americana type lifestyle where it is a melting pot. We grew up with a lot of people. We never specifically grew up in a Black neighborhood, and being that as it may, you never grew up in an area that would be stricken with limitations as far as education and opportunity go. Because if you're in a Black neighborhood, if you're in an area where resources aren't the same as with a more, more melting pot area, like with a lot of white people, like I grew up in a suburb, right? And I was given opportunities there that I wouldn't normally have afforded to me because of where I grew up. And the emphasis that my parents put on education, the fact that both my parents were home, that's another thing. And then I still didn't learn about design. I got fucking lucky, dude. I'm lucky. Like, flashback 25 years ago, I had no idea what fucking design was. No clue. My mom would always say I'd go to the greeting card section in a grocery store because I love looking at cards. I don't know why. It's just kind of always been in me. Like, I love looking at cards, comics. I love seeing imagery and type work together. It's just how my brain worked, but never knew there was a field in it. But had I not, I don't know. And being exposed to graphic design was just luck. And I think that's the biggest limitation, is just exposure. One of my good friends, Andy Kurtz, who I'm doing, the podcast with, the clubhouse with, I should say, Kirk and Kurtz, he's badass, really good designer and really good dude. But I was listening to him on a different podcast that he put up, and I just clicked it and happened to listen, even though I must admit, Evelio, I haven't listened to your podcast. And I feel bad about it, but I'm just not a podcast listener. I'm like, oh, fuck it. I'll click it on and see what's going on, because, like, an impulse thing. And I'm just explaining myself in order for you not to be mad that I haven't listened to it and you're taking so much time to listen to mine and answer so many thoughtful questions. So I don't want to feel like a complete fucking asshole. But I listened to it, and his experience of becoming a designer and getting into it was so much different than mine. But yeah, I was into art and stuff, so I was able to take a class and I learned about these designers and I went to school for college. And it's like, wow, his path was so different than mine, just because of the ample availability and chance to get the information necessary in order to do it. And I just either I didn't care about it, or and I didn't know about it to care about it. So it was just twofold. Yeah. But I feel so bad too, because I don't know who anybody is. Like, people ask me, oh, do you know this designer so-and-so? And I'll be like, no. Oh, they did this and this. I'm like, oh, that's really cool. I don't know anybody in the field. I don't know like large companies that can name like two or three maybe. But people are like, oh yeah, this company is great and this company is great. And it's like, all right, man, that's cool. I have no idea who it is. So I've kind of just been lucky and I guess blessed with an innate talent for doing certain things in the design field by, yeah. So I think the biggest opportunity to answer your question is exposure. Exposure, and that's the biggest limitation, is exposure and opportunity is to someone growing in from the Black designer's perspective. Well, my perspective anyway, I can't speak for everybody, but from my perspective.
Your last point was a good point, where it was all a good point, but your last point in terms of, you know, speaking about your perspective, right. I think, you know, anytime there's, you know, anytime somebody's interviewing somebody about, and you're talking about race, the interviewer always, like, they always seem to ask the questions from a position that that person is in some way speaking for an entire group.
Right.
Right.
Like, I'm a know-all Black designer. I'm not. Right.
Right. Right. You're just Kirk, man. And, yeah. Yeah. So I want to make it clear, like, as we kind of talk through this, I'm just speaking to you, like, you alone, and, you know, I want to know about your experience and kind of, you know, your thoughts on this, your views.
Yeah.
It just seems like every time it's always like, you know, somebody will say something and then they'll get canceled because of a specific, you know, whichever group is like, right. Oh, they don't speak for me. Or somebody's like, that's not what we're doing, man. I'm talking to Kirk Vaisola. I want to know about you, your experience. And hopefully somebody that hears this, it may be helpful in one way or another. Or right. they find your artwork and they're like, man, this is badass. Kirk, I want to work with Kirk.
There you go.
But like, so you don't know a lot of designers out there. I'm going to ask you a question and then I'm going to give you an answer. Who's your favorite Black designer? Do you have a favorite Black designer?
Fuck. I don't. That's sad. I really don't. And the thing is, I don't follow designers outside my circle either. Like, I have friends that are designers, but I don't. I'm my favorite Black designer. How's that? Fuck, dude, that's so fucked up. You know, from just for me, I guess my friend who I really admire, and you probably won't know this, is my friend Mazie Noble, MAZINOBLE. He does mainly like a lot of graph art / lettering, but he has such a good eye and like so creative and clever with his work. And I've always admired what he does. And I, you know, went to school with him for a minute and just got in touch with him over the years, but that dude is really good. Man, like, I really can't. And that's sad. That's fucked up. It just goes back to show, like, who it is. But I don't know people outside of my field. Or does video game design count? Sure. I know there's a person I follow named Momo Pixel. She's very talented. She has like a lot of 8-bit character work and game development. So she's good too. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I don't. Yeah, most people I follow or keep in touch with are friends, people I've worked with.
Sure.
And I haven't worked with a lot of Black designers. So it's crazy.
You know, just, you know, flipping that in terms of like, if I have like a, you know, if I had a favorite Black designer, or if, right, I even knew of one, there's two out of all the designers, there's two that I recognize, other than yourself, right? There's Bobby C. Martin. And the only reason I know him is because I spoke at an event after him, and his presentation was the most important thing in graphic design or something like that. His design work is amazing. He's done like some crazy stuff that you would recognize, and the guy is super knowledgeable. Right, when I'm talking, I'm stammering, I'm saying "dude," and I cuss. making up for the fact that I don't know a lot of shit. And I followed Bobby. And before the presentation, I changed the title of my presentation. I'm like, hey, is it okay if I change the name of my presentation to be the second most important thing? Because like your stuff is way more important than mine.
That's awesome. You know? That is awesome.
And he's like, yeah, whatever, dude. I don't even know you. But there's Bobby C. Martin and there's Eddie O'Para, which I think is he's been at Pentagram. He's
O'Para.
Super recognizable. But other than both of those guys they're on a circuit. They speak at a lot of places, so they're visible. And aside from those two guys, like I wouldn't know other Black designers. And it's kind of the same thing where it's like, I couldn't tell you one single Colombian designer. Yeah. For me, I like the work, I like the style, and then I'll go and research and find out who these designers are.
Right.
But like you mentioned, it's like only what, like 2%? You said 3%?
3%.
Yeah.
Let me make this clear. That was in the survey that was done. It was 3% of Black people, and that's about like 9,900 people. So almost 10,000, it was 3%. It's not set in stone, but that's a pretty fucking big sample group to get people to do things. So
it's bigger than the vaccine, you know, test groups.
Right? Jeez. But yeah, it's hard to get the opportunity in order to get the exposure. For instance, I have some big names on there on my site, but it's really hard to get a big job based upon my exposure from the networking standpoint. And having COVID really has impacted me, just because when I get with people, when I talk to people, they get to know me and they appreciate my openness and they appreciate my honesty and hopefully appreciate my sense of humor, but I just try to be myself. And if people don't like it, then that's fine. We'll move on. But I've made some really good connections at expos and networking events for different groups that I belong to. And this has kind of slowed things down being in the COVID era. So it limits opportunities from lack of financials because people are closing up shop, people are having a hard time. And I really would just like to work with, you know, one or two large brands in order to be like, hey, here's what I did, here's what I established, like do a campaign for them or something. Because I really think of myself more as a creative person that just happens to do graphic design, right? So I do a lot of stuff. Like right now I'm working on a book. I've been writing, I'm working on a graphic novel. I'm doing like the clothing business. And I also draw and sketch when I can. And I have this gamut of stuff that I can do. So I feel creative, but I just need to have that opportunity to show it in a mass scale. And they talk about imposter syndrome. And I realize like every creative suffers from it usually. And the people who don't suffer for it aren't as good as they think they are. And I'm saying that, of course, very broad statedly, but oftentimes people will just be posting stuff like, yeah, look what I did. I'm looking at it. I'm like, dude, it's not that great. It's not that great at all. And you're sitting here acting like you're the best thing ever. I know I'm not the best thing ever, but I know I'm really fucking good. And I would love to have those opportunities. But like you were saying, you know, two, I know one. And that's just the person that I automatically knew, not like a house name for doing design work. And I think that's the thing. It's just the opportunity and going back to before, exposure. So that's a couple of things too.
I think I mentioned this to you before, just in conversation, like just an experience that I had was, you know, I was building an agency for a team, of building a design agency for this company. And mm-hmm. I don't know, there's probably like 30 people on staff. There was one Black designer there, and we needed to hire another person. And I went through my network. I looked at focusing on what kind of work they were doing just to make sure that they were the right fit. I reached out to somebody that I knew, somebody that I'd met, sent in his resume. Everybody up and down approved it. They flew him in, you know, so this was in Arizona. He flew in from Texas and, you know, he walks in, he's black and like from across, you know, like a Costco size warehouse of just designers, looks over, the other black designer looks at him, they wave and they knew each other. And it's like, that's how small the group is. And that, like, I don't know, for me, it was really eye-opening.
Wow.
And, you know, just sitting down and chatting with him, like, afterwards, he's like, I'm like, how on earth do you guys, he's like, there's not a lot of us. And so we got to support each other. And he's like, I was working in, I don't know, I think he was working like in San Francisco, and then he moved to LA. He was working at this place in LA. And then he happened to cross paths with the other designer there. And yeah, he's like, when you meet another black designer, like it really sticks with you, right? Like you're going to see them and recognize them anywhere and, you know, support them. And that was just, it was mind blowing for me that, again, it was such a small group. And then, you know, hearing what you're saying in terms of just that study where there was, you know, about 3%.
Yeah.
There's opportunity for, you know, more people to be involved in design.
Right. Yeah. No, and it goes back also like what you were saying before too about, you know, the idea that even if you were going out to like specifically look for someone that was black, it would be really hard to because there aren't that many people in it. Like it's dumbfounding. It's dumbfounding to think that, you know, you go somewhere and you know someone you know, and all black people don't know each other, just for the record. Like if you see us walking down the street and we give the nod to each other, you the nod is a customary thing that black people do. It's just customary. It's like, I see you basically like, what's up, man? Like, how you doing? Like, that's it. Just let you know, like, hey, I'm here, you're there. And there's a certain kindred spirit. So it's and brotherly love, but it's not like that in design school, because there's not that many of us.
Right.
So it's very interesting that's crazy, man. That's crazy.
Yeah. And I wasn't, you know, I'm not saying that all black people know each other.
I know, man. I know. It's just me. It's just like, me being facetious.
I know.
That's the shit I do with my mom, right? It like, is I just exactly. fuck with her. It's exactly. fun.
It is fun. Yeah. Of course, I'm, in the back of my mind, I'm like, fuck, the next sentence I say, I'm going to get canceled for.
But you know what? That's why you can edit shit out. That's why we're recording this, right?
That's right. But I'm not gonna shit out. That's right. But I'm not gonna get anything out because I think it's just fun.
Dude, I gotta tell you, Tommy and Tommy Boy, when Chris Farley says, "You're white," like, no. Okay. Anyway,
so dude, I'm on your website, man. I'm looking at Ray Gun, you know, the shirt that you're wearing now. I got to tell you, the amount of work that you've done in like the branding section of this is mind blowing, right? So you've got icons, you've got illustrations, you've got type treatments, like just, you know, you've got dogs and guns and space cadets. Like you've got so many things just in this one image of the work that you did for Ray Gun Roasters. Going back to the work, like, can you just talk to me about like all of this work and what's your process and how do you, you know, what's the expectation from the client, right? Like, is the client going, hey, I want a logo, and then you show up with like enough graphics to wrap a semi-truck?
Yeah. So that's a pretty loaded question. I'll start with first the actual Ray Gun. If you guys want to look at it, it's on my website. It's another Ray Gun clicker or whatever, but this, okay. That thing, that entire process right there was done in 3 days. From sketch to execution, like all that stuff was 3 days. Mm-hmm. And it was basically me coming up or going off of riffing off of an idea that my friend had. My friend Tony, he's a coffee dude. And I was thinking like, fuck, I would love to get in a coffee. He's like, yeah, you know, he's talking about David Bowie and he's talking about the whole Ziggy Stardust and there's a line in there about, you know, Reagan. I suddenly said about Reagan, I'm like, holy shit, that'd be a fucking dope name. And then it's all that sparked. I just started sketching. Like I sketched out the little space dude. I sketched out the gun. I sketched out the dog. And then I started sketching out fonts. Like all those fonts are custom, you know, like just for me sketching them out. And I was like, how many ways can I do this? Because it seems, I think about brands like Nike, where they do have this swoosh, but they also go off and do their own thing and brand things separately. So I was like, how many ways can you brand this to make it tangible and make it cool? And I wanted to get that retro feel. So I started thinking about different spaces. And so I started, you know, Photoshopping it into spaces and how it would work in a space. And I started thinking about how the coffee bag itself would work, what would be the system for that. And so that was just me just playing. I was basically fucking around and playing and came up with that because I was, like I said before, like when I did the Visola brand site, I was just doing something that I wanted to do. And this was the same thing. I just do something what I want to do. And that's the fucked up thing about the creative process. Sometimes it comes to you immediately. Right. And then sometimes you have to struggle and obsess with it for weeks at a time in order to come up with a solution. And sometimes you don't have that fucking luxury and have to come up with something sooner than that. But that's how Reagan happened. It was literally just 3 days of me fucking around, like a total of about, I don't know, let's say 15 to 20 hours, just me messing around and doing all that stuff. Normally, though, what I would do in regards to a concept for a client and just doing their brand is that I come to them and I say, hey, okay, you have a brand. It would be great to have a brand strategy if you have it. If you don't, we can have a conversation, a long conversation. I can figure out everything you're about and I can take notes and I can see what you're going to. And the more passionate the client has about something and the more direction that they have and the more heart they have into it, like they have a mission, they have everything about it. It's easier to go off in order to create a brand for them. And when I do a brand, I like to execute it in a certain amount of phases. Like the first phase, I'll present three different directions, usually three. And I will title them what they're supposed to do, how they're supposed to feel, and what they're supposed to look at. And those are buckets or themes. And I'll do that. And I'll give them three examples of what they could do. And then from there, they say, okay, I like this one. I like this one. That's great. I try not to let them Frankenstein stuff too much. Yeah. Like, oh, I like the font from this one, the icon from that one. It's like, well, these are three different ideas, so we can work on something in a specific idea or theme, but I really don't want to Frankenstein something. And then from there, we do a round of revisions. And then from there, you finalize, think of colors. I don't ever introduce colors the first rounds either, which is what, unless they already have a set color and I'm just redesigning something, I'll implement the same color. But I'll use the same color throughout all the logos. But I try to make sure that things, I know it's silly, they reproduce good in black and white. And they're simple. But that's how I go about the process. So I'll do usually sketches for myself to kind of figure things out. Like right now, I mean, I'm sketching stuff. You know, I was sketching mm-hmm. stuff. And so I'm always sketching and figuring out different ways to come up with the actual solution. I'll sketch and 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 sketch.
So like that sheet, your brain. So like that sheet of sketches that you just showed.
Yeah.
How much work was that? Like, is that like 20 minutes? Really?
20 minutes. Yeah.
That's insane. So you know, if you're not seeing look, this.
Kurt, so this right here, this
yeah.
flop, I did that yesterday morning or day before, and I spent about 4 hours with it and came up with an entire brand, like how it's executed on magazines, how it'd be on the shirt. So I made it into a skateboard company or a skate gear company, right? So I put it on wheels and mocked it up, and it's just like you have these creative impulses, but sometimes it just takes work if I don't know what I'm doing. And that idea spawned for me doing research for the other one. So it's like this stream of consciousness where I'm just, oh fuck it, and I'll just do this. And I got, you know, the ADHD kicked in. I just started working on something else. But yeah, so I'm sorry I interrupted you about the sketches on the page.
No. So two things. Yeah. So sketch on the page. So for anybody that's listening to this, not seeing this, you know, Kirk just showed an entire sheet that is covered with like logos and type and, you know, all hand drawn. And, you know, you're saying it took you about 20 minutes.
Yeah.
Like that process is for me, like I love the sketch process. Like I think, you know, if you don't sketch, you know, you're not doing it right. Right. But that's not correct. But that's how I feel.
No, right? Dude, that's close to correct, man.
Because I've worked with a lot of designers. Yeah, I've worked with Matt, who owns Think Packaging in New Zealand, and he does like structure. And he's like, man, because I don't sketch, because I can picture it and I CAD it and I can build it and it's done. You know, he's like, that's my process. It's like I don't have time for rough outline.
Good for you, Matt. You're fucking amazing.
He's a badass in his process. And then there's like other people that go right to the computer and they can sketch in the computer. I'm not that way. So I love and I appreciate like a pencil sketch. Like I love the sound of the pencil on the paper.
Yeah, it's so great. I used to have like oodles of just papers randomly. Like it's either me drawing or me sketching out ideas. It's oodles and oodles of stuff of just shit that I've, you know, sketched out.
I feel like all those sketches are like amazing. Like, you know, like that type that you just showed me for different, like that was killer.
Like doing this and probably showing you shit that I shouldn't, but whatever. And then this, like.
He's showing me some new Nike stuff he's working on.
No, it's all small things, but yeah, it's just one of those things where I have to write things down or sketch and I'm able to process it better.
Yeah.
And then the other thing too, I realized, and I hope I didn't just totally step on your thought process, but I like to go and sketch out an idea, just anything to get out of my fucking head.
Yeah.
Like I need to get it out. It needs to get out. And then once it's out, it's like, okay, done.
You move on.
And it also helps me go back to things. It's almost like having a dream. Like I came up with this idea. The tangent interview where nothing makes sense. I had a dream about this character and it was the weirdest and strangest fucking dream I ever have. I'm like, oh my God, that's amazing. And I got up and I just sketched out a couple things and wrote them down because I knew if I didn't, I would forget. And I forgot, right? And so the next week I'm going through stuff and I'm looking through things and I see that sketch. I'm like, holy shit, I totally forgot about this. And this is so amazing. And then the entire dream floods back to me and like what I was thinking during the dream and how it happened. I'm like, oh, this is amazing. This is great. And it's really, that's what started the idea for my graphic novel that I'm working on. And so it's always good to sketch, even if it doesn't make sense at the time, just sketch it out to get it out of your head. And so maybe it sparks an idea later. I use sketches almost as a visual journal. I mean, it sounds redundant because most journals, you write something down and they are visual when you're reading them, but more of a pictorial journal. There you go. That's what I use it for.
But you're right. You're right. Like, so when you're sketching, like you might, like you have, I don't know, you had something on there written different. And, you know, you might be working on that D and for whatever reason, like just the D itself, like sparks a different idea for something completely random. That's not anything to do with what you're working on. And you're like, oh, let me reshape this D into a cactus, you know, whatever you see. And designers, I think it's, I don't know. It's just, it's great to be playful in your process where you're not just like, right. You're not just locked into, I got to finish this item. It's like you got to make that time to explore and search and come up with like new things and, you know, maybe even just flesh out whatever that concept is that popped into your head, flesh it out, put it aside, and then keep working. Because it just makes you a better designer, right? When you work on something else, you might, that cactus D or whatever you came up with, like that can be helpful in another area. Like, oh yeah, that idea that I had, let's see if it worked or didn't work.
Exactly.
But then
that's so true.
You've got like Ray Gun, you know, that's something that you created, you know, it took 3 days to like build out and post on your site. You know, no specific client here. It's just about the work. And a lot of times designers don't want to create false projects, right? They only want to show, well, I got paid $50 for this logo, right? They rather show that than, I spent 3 days building this like amazing brand because it doesn't exist. And they're like, well, this one I got paid for, this one I didn't. But
that's right? Fucking huge right there, bro. Like, honestly, that's huge. There's think about all the times that you've worked on a box, you know, and you had different parameters where things would fold and pop and the client says at the end, oh, we can't afford that. And they go with some fucking shitty ass stock cardboard fold up box and you think like, damn, that was so good. Like, yeah, it was good. So post it. Yeah. So talk about it because oftentimes the concepts you create are much better than finished products because even from a personal standpoint, you'll fall in love with something from a personal standpoint, which is often bad as a designer, because then you get attached to something, your feelings get hurt, like your feelings actually matter to a client. I've also learned that all my work is shit. I think it's shit because I have to, because the client will say if they like it or not. And so I'm always nervous going into something. But if I do work on a project and I happen to love it, and that means that I love it, and it doesn't matter what anybody else thinks. And you can show that. And a lot of times too, if you're any good at what you do, people will fall in line with your thought process or see your ideas behind it. And the other thing too is have people in your circle that you can go to and ask questions to. Like I have my father Outlaw, who was the head of creative services Outlaw, because he's not my father-in-law anymore, but really good friend, really good mentor. I try to have lunch with him like, you know, once every 2 months or something, but I always send him stuff I'm working on. And you know what he does? He says either, oh, that's looking good, or that doesn't work, try this. Mm-hmm. And that's all you need. Like, you need people who understand you. Another good friend of mine, his name is Nikita Prokhorov. That dude's fucking badass with type, and he does ambigrams. I don't know if you've heard of him, but he does ambigrams. My other friend, Lou Paro, Andy, and my friend Tommy Bosch, and you have all these people you can just send stuff to, like, hey, I'm working on this, what do you think? And let's say, oh, that's cool, why don't you try this? And it's like, oh, damn, I didn't even see that. So it's a matter of actually having people in your circle that you trust, regardless of if you got paid for it or not. The point to doing design, the point to doing anything, is to do your best. It's to do the best you can. And sometimes the best you can do, that isn't the finished product. It's something that happened where it got Frankenstein, where a committee got involved, and it ends up being this watered down version of what you thought. And people will see it and they'll still say, oh, that's cool. But you can always go back and say, well, this is what I wanted to do. And they'll say, oh shit, that's dope. And that's the difference. You want to go from good to dope. Like, oh man, that's good. But like, oh shit, that's dope. Right? Like, and no matter what it is, if it's a good concept or not, just show it. Like, just put it on there. A lot of the stuff I do, like even on my page, on my page, and I'm admitting this now, is that it's concept work. Mm. And if you were to look at it, you wouldn't know which one it was, would you? Yeah. Right?
Does it matter? Right? That's the question.
Matter.
I'm hiring you for the way that you think and the way that you view the world. Right? How do you interpret design for brands? So
correct.
If the work that you're doing is the style that I'm looking for, or the results that I'm looking for, it doesn't matter if it was concept or not, right? Now, somebody may argue, yeah, but we don't know if that worked in, you know, consumer research, or we don't know if that actually would increase sales or decrease sales.
Right.
You know,
it's not my job.
Exactly. So I think for a designer that's out there, like any designer that's out there, and you know, they've got 3 days to kill because they're out of work, or they're in between projects or between jobs. Like, just fucking make something, right? Like, just go out, you know, if you're eating a bag of chips, like, just redesign the bag of chips, like, whatever it is that you don't have to put all this thought into, I've got to create a, you know, a shoe brand. I've got to, you know, no, man, it's like, whatever's in front of you, design something around it, post it, share it, you know, get out there, and people will notice. But people won't notice is when you don't post anything.
Dude, and that's the big thing for me now too, is posting stuff. Because I always have ideas and I always have, but I get, you know, almost horrified or shell-shocked, or, you know, have that doubt about posting something because, oh, I'm not sure how that works, and will it work for this, and it's going to ruin this, and it's going to ruin that. And it's just fucking post it. And I think that we automatically start self-editing. And that's a creative's curse.
Yeah.
Is when you start self-editing and you don't even try to do things because you feel it won't work based upon whatever model or whatever thing's been put in front of you. If you want to try something, fucking do it. No one's going to die from a bad design. You're not a doctor, right? You're not a fucking brain surgeon. All you're doing is creating something that looks pretty, and no one's going to die from that. There's never, and don't any motherfuckers tell you that there's an emergency, a design emergency, because there isn't. If you have a production run that's due and you have things that need to get done before it, I understand that, because you cannot miss production runs a lot of time, because it's the only time that a company can actually fill a product or print something or whatever. And yet that thing's printed before it. So there's deadlines. I understand that. But for someone to say, oh my God, I have to get this done by tomorrow, it's an emergency, it's a postcard. Like, well, first of all, it's not an emergency, all right? Second of all, it's not my fault you planned poorly. Okay, yeah. So let's get that through your head. And third, it's not going to be the best that I can do because of what happened. You get lucky sometimes. Sometimes you get lucky. Like I got lucky, you know, figuring out that I can do design or knowing about design. I get lucky sometimes with concepts that I come up with, right? Like that sloop concept or the ray gun. It just came to me. Like, and sometimes that happens, but it's not luck based upon the fact that I don't know what I'm doing. It's luck based upon the fact that I've had so much planning and a spark happened, and that spark gave me the creativity, like unlocked the creativity necessary in order to do something. And I think that no matter what it is, no matter what you do, if you have that spark of creativity, fucking do it. And if it's great, post it, show it, because that's what people are looking for, is your thought process. My work is super eclectic. If you look at my work, nothing looks the same. And that's on purpose, because I don't want to be this person who gets pigeonholed as being, you know, oh, he's the type person, or oh, he's this type of person, or he does that. It's like, I want to be known for being a creative person and doing the best I can in regards to design. And I think that's the thing. If you see something that you want to do, fucking do it and have fun with it, and then post it. If you like it, fucking post it. What's someone going to say? They don't like it. Design is subjective, and there's never an emergency. So keep those two things in mind, and you'll be okay.
That's awesome, man. What's the right type of client for you?
Ooh, yeah. Andy and I were talking about this. He was talking about it from a business standpoint of actually figuring out for a basis, and I'm paraphrasing, of course, of making sure that a business relationship is established and that a respect is gained in order for you to have the proper client, and that they pay, that their morals are good. And that's the thing. For me, my perfect client is someone who's not an asshole. And an asshole can come in different forms. Like, they can just be rude. They can just be a person that's out for themselves and a narcissist. They could be trying to do something that's morally corrupt. And I want to believe in their brand. I want them to show me the empathy that they should show to their clients and the people who are going to be buying something from them or using their services. I want to be able to have that amount of empathy. Like, I want to be able to have a coffee or a cocktail with somebody. That's my client. Sometimes you get burned from a standpoint of not getting paid or losing out because you charge too much or you lose an opportunity. But the thing is I'd rather have a contact that I've made in good thought than pursuing something just because of a certain list that I have. My list is simple. Don't be an asshole. Like, I'm not going to work with assholes. And that's my list of people I work with. Right. And so that's how I get my perfect client.
Any industries specific? You know, I see you got some tomatoes and some teas. You got some food in here. Is food, beverage, is that your
area that you love? That's the area I love. I love this. The one area that I really love, and I haven't posted anything on my site, I don't think, is wine. I love doing wine. That's how I came up starting with wine and those concepts. I love doing wine. I also really like doing like boxed goods, like consumer packaged goods, you know, crackers and rice and all that other stuff, bars. And so I love the food and beverage space, for lack of a better term.
Food's your spot? That's cool.
Yeah.
Food's not my spot at all.
What do you like doing, like clothing and technical boxes and product, right? Like product stuff?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. For sure. I mean, I like doing that too. It's just, I think food has so much more room to play.
Yeah, you find your niche, man, and that's it. Like, I've had people reach out from the food side, and I'm like, you know what, man, I'd love to help you, but you know, I'd be a novice in this area. You know, I wouldn't be able to help you.
Dude, now here's a question for you, and this is a very important question. When I see something, people say, if you're not qualified for the job exactly, still apply for it.
Yeah.
Right. Like, if you want the job, apply for it. If you do this, I always feel like a poser. I still feel like a poser when I'm trying to talk about packaging or trying to do things, but I've been doing it for a long time and I'm good at it. But if I don't feel comfortable doing something, I will be honest with someone and say, that's just not, I don't have the skill set to do that. And I will refer them to someone or say, like, this is what you need to do instead. And there's been several times where I straight up have turned people away because I can't help them. Not that I don't want to help them. It's just, I can't help them. And that's helped them in the way that I think would be best for not only for them and their product, but reflects best for me. Like, will this product or will this experience be indicative of what I normally do? And if the answer is no, then you shouldn't fucking do it. Like, it's fine to stretch and to get out of your comfort zone and stretch your wings, but make sure that you're not, you know, being like Icarus and flying too close to the sun and falling and dying. There's a certain amount of stretching you need to do, right?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, definitely. You know, if there's something you're interested in and you can, and you kind of fake your way through it, if it's a slight stretch, you're not going to tear a hamstring or anything, then do it, right? But if you're like me, I have zero food packaging experience. And by zero, I've done like 3 projects in 20 years. I probably never show any of those ever again, right? So is there somebody that can do that job better than me? Absolutely. If somebody comes to me, I'm like, dude, that's not me. And I'm like, here's who you should talk to Kirk. Because you've got a ton more experience in this area than I do. Now, if it's like, somebody in tech and it's been a product that I'm not familiar with, and it's a brand that I really respect and I want to work with, I'll let them know up front. I'm like, look, I can do this. Here's some areas here's some gaps. We probably need to pull in a couple of people to support, to support this. And I'm up front, I'm like, hey man, this is where I fit in. This is like, I'm plug and play. Like this is my slot.
Right.
And beyond that, that's not, I can't help you. Right. But I think that's important, but it's important to stretch and reach out and do stuff. I love the fact that you're creating, all these projects. Are you getting work from these let me ask you this. Are you getting work from the projects on your site, or are you getting work from people getting to know you on Clubhouse, on your Clubhouse Tuesday show?
Wow. It's an interesting question. I don't think I've gotten a lot of work from on my site. It's just mainly it's a portfolio, but I've gotten a couple of inquiries through there. A lot. I get more connections when I'm actually able to talk to people. So when I'm actually able to talk and converse and people see who I am and understand my skill set and knowledge, then I get the opportunity to do it. Or if people have worked with me before, I've had a friend I've known for over 20 years and we still do things regular for a company he's working for. The guy that I was talking about earlier, my friend Tony, is coffee, and we're probably going to work on stuff together with a new coffee joint he's working with. So most of my clients that I have are people that I've known and worked with because they appreciate the fact that I work quickly and I'm good at what I do. And that's really hard to, and I'm not expensive. Like, it may seem expensive when I charge someone a certain price, but it's not expensive for what you're getting.
Right.
And I think that people will understand that. So for me, the biggest thing is not even necessarily Clubhouse for my website, but direct interaction, which is why I was saying earlier that the expos being down and the missed opportunities to live network are hurtful, not only for businesses from a commodity standpoint like CPG, but also for vendors like myself or people like myself who just need to, shake hands and talk to people. Now it's all fist bumping and virtual, virtual shit going on. But Clubhouse is great because I think it opens opportunity for people to say, well, I listen to you on Clubhouse. So they come up and talk and they ask questions. Because half the time I'm speaking, I'm just regurgitating what I've been taught and what I've learned. It's not anything new, but it might be new for someone who's listening for the first time. So hope that answers your question.
That's rad, man. So just, wrapping up, if anybody wants to contact you, right? If anybody wants to contact Kurt Bysola to get some packaging design, branding work, what's the best place they can reach you and where can they find you?
Well, mindthefont.com is my professional work, but the easiest way to reach me is just literally type in Kirk Bysola and it will get to me in their Google webs. And so it's mindthefont.com, kirkbysola.com, which is my personal site. And there may be some repetition between Mind the Font and there, but yeah, Kirk Bysola, KRKVISOLA. I'm the only one.
Awesome. So, and good. What are your Clubhouse dates and times?
Oh, great. Thanks, Ben, for asking. So Mondays at noon Pacific, 12 Pacific, I do Mondays with Marilyn, and that's just me chatting with my mom about current events and whatever stuff I can say to make her laugh. And then Thursdays, I do CPG packaging design with Kirk and Kurtz. So it's myself and my good friend Andy Kurtz of Buttermilk Creative, who's also a complete badass. We do a clubhouse every Thursday, and we speak all things packaging or design related. The cool thing is, the last couple of weeks, we've just talked about, like I talked about having to fire a client. He's talked about having to make the client relationship and what you need to do in order to form more clients. He takes a more business approach. I take more of a personal connection. So we're talking about that. So yeah, that's Thursdays, and that's at 12 p.m. Pacific Standard Time also on Clubhouse.
Awesome.
Yeah, that's the packaging design of Kurt and Kurtz.
Yeah, Kurt and Kurtz.
That's underneath the startupcpg.com, startupcpg greenhouse on Clubhouse. So go there and you'll find us, and go to startupcpg.com. on their Slack channel and follow them there. I'm just doing shameless plugs right now for everybody that
Just you know, go to Clubhouse, type in Kirk Vaisola. It's Kirk, not Kurt.
Yeah, correct.
Kurtz is the other guy.
Yeah, Andy.
Yep. So definitely, they can find you there. The Thursday show, man, is a great show. If you're a startup and you've got questions on like where to get packaging or where to even start, you know, I love that you guys have people pop up and they're like, hey, I'm launching a new X brand. And what do I do? And you guys just, you provide a ton of information there. It's super helpful.
Thanks, man. And it's not only us too, but I have my good friend, Brandon Hernandez. He is partner at Whole Brain Consulting. And he knows everything about co-manufacturing from every standpoint of, okay, this is the ingredient you need. This is what you have to do. He's a genius in regards to that, and he'll pop in. And literally, he came in one day, and everybody was just asking him questions. And Andy and I just sat back and let him answer. It's like this encyclopedia of knowledge in regards to everything that needs to go into a bottle or a pouch or whatever. And he knew exactly what to do because he's been doing it for so long. Another guy in there, his name's Russell, and he talks about the actual structural side of things. You know Russell, right? Yeah.
Packaging scientist.
So he pops in there, and then you'll pop in there, right? And then it's like we have all these people, like you'll talk about the actual structure and what type of cardboard to use, how thick it should be, if it's corrugated, if it's like and what's recyclable and what's not. And the new pop in there, it's like there's always people coming in, and it's just a great opportunity or space for brands starting out in order to figure out what they want to do next or what the next step would be, whether regards to aesthetics or actual content inside your package. It's a great spot to drop in. So yeah, Thursdays, Clubhouse, Kirk and Kurtz.
Definitely check that out. You'll learn a lot. Super helpful, man. I want to end this with a shout out to your mom, to Marilyn, because she said in your conversation, she said that her goal was to raise the best children that she could raise. And I don't know, that stuck with me, where she was like, it didn't matter about like work or didn't matter about like whatever was going on. Like her whole focus was her kids.
Hey, packaging peeps, it's Avelio Matos on Package Design Unboxed. So just a heads up, this episode is not G-rated. It is chock full of adult language. Consider this your warning. Today, we talk with my friend and designer, Kirk Vaisola. He co-hosts the weekly Clubhouse meeting, Kurt and Kurtz, with Andy Kurtz. He also does Mondays with Marilyn, where he talks with his mom, Marilyn. I recommend you check both of those out. So Kirk and I had a conversation before about the lack of Black designers, and I thought it might be a good idea to have that conversation on the podcast. I got to tell you, it's a super clunky conversation around a very sensitive topic, and I'm completely uncomfortable during the entire episode. We also get into Kirk's packaging design process. We talk about his clients and what he strives for with each project. And we get into just, his sketching, the way that he promotes himself. We talk about some of his interviews that he's had before for job interviews. We get into a lot of details about him as a designer as well. So stick around, listen to the entire episode. There's a lot of information here. Normally I tell you what you're going to learn in each episode, but this episode is more about what I learned, including maybe that I'm not the right person to have this conversation on a podcast. But maybe that's the wrong way to think, right? Maybe we need to have more of these conversations that make us uncomfortable. How else are we going to get to know each other? So let's get to the show and let's get to know Kirk Vaisola.